10, chapter 4, text 3, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Kamsa immediately got up from bed thinking, here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me. Thus overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head, at once approached the place where the child had been born. Purport. The word Kala is significant. Although the child was born to kill Kamsa, Kamsa thought that this was the proper time to kill the child so that he himself would be saved. Kala is actually another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he appears only for the purpose of killing. When Arjuna inquired from Krishna in his universal form, who are you? The Lord presented himself as Kala, death personified to kill. By nature's law, when there is an unwanted increase in population, Kala appears, and by some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways by war, pestilence, famine, and so on. At that time, even atheistic political leaders go to a church, mosque, or temple for protection by God or gods, and submissively say, God willing. Death is but another feature of the supreme Kala, the supreme personality of Godhead. At the time of death, the atheist must submit to this supreme Kala, and then the supreme personality of Godhead takes away all his possessions, mrityu sarvaharaschaham, and forces him to accept another body, tatha dehantara praptihi. This the atheists do not know, and if they do know, they neglect it so that they may go on with their normal life. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to teach them that although for a few years one may act as a great protector or great watchman, with the appearance of Kala, death, one must take another body by the laws of nature. Not knowing this, they unnecessarily waste their time in their occupation as watchdogs and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is clearly said, aprapya mang devartante mrityu sangsara vartmani. Without Krishna consciousness, one is condemned to continue wandering in birth and death, not knowing what will happen in one's next birth. Kamsa feels that now death is upon me. As the saying goes, staring death in the face. It is not a pleasant situation for the materialists. Those who know that death is Krishna and who are devotees of Krishna, for them it is not unpleasant. Prabhupada explained that once during the Second World War, when Calcutta was being bombed, he had just started to sit down and take prasadam when the bombs started dropping. And they all said, come quickly to the bomb shelter. Prabhupada said, I'll take prasad and then I'll go. And he said, the bombs are going, so we're laughing, but if you're sitting in the middle of it, it's not something to laugh at. But Prabhupada was thinking, Prabhupada explained that he was thinking, this is Krishna in another form. Maro bi rakho bi jo iccha toha nitya dasa prati tua adhika. You kill me or protect me, whatever is your wish. I am your eternal surrendered servant and you have full jurisdiction over what to do with me. We were just singing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. So like many of these kirtans, they're easy to sing. But actually to have that realization or enter into that mood, that is something else. We can sing, "You kill me as you like." But actually to have that realization is not so easy. A devotee told me that he was on a bus with another devotee once in Africa. And they were going at night, and they have a system of locking the door of the bus while it's traveling. So they were going over a railway line, driving over a railway line, when they got stuck. And then they saw the light in the distance and heard the sound. The train is coming at them. And they couldn't get the door open. So everyone was stuck inside and screaming. And one of the two brahmacharis, and one was alarmed, and he joined, he got caught in the mood of all the people, screaming, "We're going to die." And this is how the devotee told me, and I said to him, "Just, you know, chant Hare Krishna." So the train came, the light coming brighter and brighter till the whole bus was lit up. The train came, everyone could see the train coming right at them, and then it went past on the other line. So they were saved. And another devotee told me he had been in a car. These are all anecdotes going back to the 1970s. He's in a car early morning, very dark, driving in Delhi, driving with a group of devotees. And it was very, very dark early morning. And in those days, there were hardly any street lights in India, even in Delhi. And so they were going along, and it was a very narrow road. And all of a sudden, right in front of them, they saw it, as they were driving along, they saw a truck. They didn't see it before because they didn't have any lights on. And it was driving right at them. And they just saw it just before. So one devotee was sitting in the car called out, "Jesus, Mary, Joseph!" And then suddenly the taxi driver swerved with one of those mystic power that there are not more people killed on the streets of India is due to mystic power. They have this ability that when you're like 2 centimeters in front of a vehicle, and suddenly they swerve and they don't get killed. So that's what he did, and then they were going on, driving. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Chanting. And the devotee had called out, "Jesus, Mary, Joseph," which as you can ascertain is a Christian and specifically a Catholic saying. Protestants, they won't say that. So he said, "Well, I hadn't said that for at least 15 years since before I joined the movement." But it came up out of his subconsciousness at that time. If it had come up, Hare Krishna, that would have been wonderful. But anyway, maybe if it happened to him now, he would, because he's been chanting Hare Krishna for many years now. But this anecdote just goes to show how deep is our conditioning. The time of death is a time of testing. Prabhupada used to quote, "Bhajan kara, shadan kara, marte jante hoy." That all our bhajan, our spiritual activities, bhajan kara, it's all, we shall know about it at the time of death. We shall see at the time of death. Once devotee asked in the class, then how can we know who is sincere? It's very difficult to say, actually, isn't it? How can you tell? Sometimes someone seems very sincere, and then they vanish, and you find that all the month's collection has also suddenly vanished. Sometimes it happens. Not in this temple. Not very often, but sometimes it happens. Temptation is there. So, Prabhupada is quoting it, Ashadadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa. Aprapyamang nivartante mrityu sangsara vartmani. Those who are not faithful, they do not persevere on this path of devotional service, but they return to repeated birth and death. So not everyone who takes up Krishna consciousness remains. And there may be many reasons for their not remaining in Krishna consciousness. But ultimately we have to say that they weren't sincere enough to do so. Because there may be many factors involved, but if someone gives up Krishna consciousness, then it ultimately means that their desire to attain Krishna was not as strong as their desire to go back to materialistic life. So, who is sincere? The devotee giving the class answered, at the end we shall see who is sincere. Of course, there's no end in Krishna consciousness, but we'll see who continues in Krishna consciousness throughout life. So, Madhvacharya, he also comments that how to ascertain the advancement of a devotee. General symptoms are given, but it may be that a devotee is faking them. It may be even he doesn't even realize it, that he's faking it. Or, as I've heard many times from devotees, that when I speak to them and glorify their Vaishnava qualities and their service, quite often devotees say to me, yes, it may be that I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but you don't know what's going on inside my mind. So, mind. Dushtaman tumi kije Vaishnav. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur addresses, my dear mind, what kind of devotee are you? Patishta tore nirjana ghare tava hari nama keval kaita. Your chanting of Hare Krishna is all cheating. But people are praising. Oh, great devotee, sitting alone chanting Hare Krishna. All cheating, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says. So these are very harsh indictments. Who is sincere? Well, at least some sincerity must be there, whatever it may be, to remain on this path, because Maya is an empowered devotee of the Lord who has invented innumerable ways to entice us from Krishna's service. Mostly she doesn't entice us, she just keeps us in her grip. The two phases of Maya. Avaranatmika Shakti. Mostly everyone is covered over. And Prakshepatmika Shakti. And for those who want to come out of the covering of Maya, she has another phase for throwing back. Get back, get back, go back, or come back. Won't you like to be with me? We've been good friends for so many years. I'm your mother. Will you come back to me? Just a little bit. Just a little bit means come close to Maya and she will embrace. And we shall embrace and think how nice it is to come back to you. One rascal who used to be my godbrother wrote in some essay, which was published recently in a book full of many rascal essays were written, to show how all the things that are wrong with the Krishna consciousness movement, a very frank look at the Krishna consciousness movement through the eyes of various rascals who got the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, but later, due to being very great rascals, rejected it. And there are also others who are superficially still members of the Krishna conscious movement and writing very horrible things. So this fool, he wrote an essay, Why I Left ISKCON, and he's giving so many reasons. And he said, well, actually, you see, they reject material life, but it's not so bad. You see, when you go to material life, you don't find it's not so bad. And there's many good things to do in material life, many cultured things. You can listen to a symphony or look at a work of art, and you can relate with people. And there's so many good things in material life. Such a fool. Listen to a symphony, look at a work of art, and then you go to hell. Actually, Maya has so many forms of enticing us. One of my godbrothers, he commented that Maya has come in the form of TV and captured everybody. But some people were a little bit more intelligent, so they didn't watch TV. So she came back again as the computer. Now you're caught. And even on TV, Maya has come as educational programs, Discovery Channel, for instance. Instead of finding out about Krishna, we find out about weasels and discoverers and the mating habits of Arctic terns and all other interesting but useless information which fills up our head so that our thoughts are not full of Krishna. And of course it's all presented by very reasonable, knowledgeable persons who are fully convinced of Darwin's nonsense. So they'll say things, and yes, and this weasel is digging in the ground, and nature has endowed with like this, and probably they evolved like this. And we're thinking, oh yes. So Maya has got a tremendous repertoire of allurements. And she's very inventive also. She has more things that we cannot imagine. There are so many wonderful things Maya has to offer. But Maya's gifts, the wonderful gifts of life, what it comes down to eventually, in most cases, is sex. We're not supposed to talk about these things in India. Sometimes temple presidents complain to me that we shouldn't talk about these things in India because people are more cultured. You see, you're just a mlecha from the West. And so you like to talk about all these things. But in India, we're more cultured. So you shouldn't speak about these things. But as far as I know, the population of India has surpassed the billion mark. So it's not that it's unknown in India. And apart from that, it is the binding force in material life. Pungsa striya, Pungsestriyo mitani bhavametam tayoraho hridya grantimahu. Ato griha kshetra sutabda vitaya janasya mohoyam ahammameti. The binding force in material life is the attraction between male and female. And it's true, even in India, even among the cultured people of India, what to speak of the uncultured people of India, this sexual attraction is the binding force, the basic principle. And it becomes very strong when male and female unite, so that one becomes attached to home, wife, children, bank balance, sons, daughters, money. And in this way, one is bewildered, thinking in terms of I and mine. So this is Maya. Of course, it's not the only trick of Maya. And for some people, there are other things which they actually take more pleasure in than sex life. As one devotee was telling me, that he was distributing books, I think in Finland, somewhere in Europe. And he was saying to the person that material life is in material life, the highest pleasure is sex life. He said, "Oh no, not for me. I am a conductor of a symphony." You know what a symphony is? It's when you have all these different, lots of instruments. There's a symphony orchestra. I'm a conductor of an orchestra. Sorry, a symphony is a... they have so many different instruments. There's acoustic instruments. And the conductor, he conducts. He goes like this. And he's like the leader of the group. And he said, there's nothing higher, there's no higher pleasure than conducting an orchestra. So, all right, okay, in your case it may not be so, but it's still Maya. It still enmeshes us in birth and death, whatever it may be. And like all other material pleasures, conducting an orchestra, you can only do it so long. Old age comes, and then one can't stand even, or one doesn't have the mental sharpness to do so. That happens with all, most of the material skills. I remember many years ago seeing a mridanga player in Bangladesh. He's an old man, so he knew all the theory and knew how to play, but he couldn't play anymore because his hands had become too stiff. So he was discussing with our devotees about playing mridanga and repeating the bowls and all this, but he couldn't do anymore. So time destroys everything. We take so much time to study, to become a doctor. First of all, your parents send you to pre-kindergarten. Then they send you to pre-kindergarten. Then they send you to kindergarten. Then you go to school. And then you have tuition in the evening. And tuition in the morning also, right? Starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then you go to school. And then you go on to university or medical college. And then you get your MBBS. Then you do your specialization. Then you do super specialization. And then you get a heart attack. So there's so much time spent studying, and maybe you don't get a heart attack, or maybe you have time to practice for a few years before you get a heart attack, and then it's all over. You spend so much time studying, and then you earn money for some time, and then you die. And then you become, depends, there are so many different forms of life that you can enter into. Gynecologists, or abortionists, As Prabhupada said, those who perform abortions, they will, by the result of their karma, they will again and again enter wombs from which they will not emerge to see the light of day. They will remain in darkness, again and again entering the wombs of mothers, and again not having the opportunity to come out. Because tit for tat, that is the law of karma. So the endeavor to enjoy this material world is terminated by death. Or often it's partially terminated, or well, there's no such thing as partial termination, but it's restricted by old age, which comes before death. Time. We spend so much time studying to acquire some material skills, but within a short time, all our endeavors, they end in death. And therefore, for the materialist, death is so fearful. We find here that Kamsa, he was so confident, he of conquering over all the demigods, controlling the earth. But when death comes, then what is the value? It all comes to nothing. For the materialist, death is extremely fearful. Therefore, the materialist, at the time of death, they pass stool and urine out of fear. Out of great fear, the muscles which hold the stool and urine in the body, they cease to function, and the stool and urine flow from the body at the time of death, out of fear, great fear. They're so much afraid. It's not at all pleasant, very unpleasant. We may, when we hear someone, they're facing death and they're so afraid, we may feel some sympathy for them, even though they're so much sinful. There was a video made maybe 15 years ago, there was a dictator in Liberia, in West Africa, who was, he made Hitler look like a gentleman or something like this. He was very, extremely nasty, just killing people on whim, and killed so many people. And eventually there was another rival group. They came and there was a coup and they took over. They took over the country and they came to his palace and arrested him. And they made a video of him being tortured before he died. They were going to kill him. So they made a video of this, of how he was this man who had been controlling the country and so proud and killing people just at his wish. He was kneeling down and praying to his political adversary who had now taken over the country, praying, please, please spare me. But he didn't spare him. They showed the video of shooting him. There's also another during the Vietnam War, there was two photos became very famous, the two together of one man, Vietnamese man, who had been arrested and he was known to be a Viet Cong spy in South Vietnam at that time. Now it's one country. So they had a picture of them He was tied up in the street and a picture of the gun put at his forehead. And no mask or anything. So the look on his face was harrowing, that now he knows I'm about to die, and there's such a look on his face. And the next picture shows his body at a slight angle with a fountain of blood coming out of the side of his head just after he was shot. So much fear, so much pain is caused by death. This Van Gogh also gave a famous painting of during the Spanish Civil War, I think it was, of people standing before the firing squad. Look on their face as they usually they put some cloth over the eyes, but he painted the scene that he had seen of people standing about to be shot. The look of fear on their face. Everyone experiences such fear. Kamsa experiencing such fear. Prabhupada often praised Socrates because he went fearlessly to death. He was asked to drink this poison. And quite without any perturbation, he drank it. Because he knew that I am not the body, I shall not die, the soul is eternal. That he went fearlessly to death is a symptom of his being a great personality. Because how many people in history are known as going fearlessly to death? Because he knew, I'm not the body. Of course, there are persons who go fearlessly to death, just like this, because they have faith in an afterlife. But sometimes that is tamasic also, a tamasic faith in the afterlife, just like the kamikaze pilots during the Second World War. They're usually young men, just in their teens, they were trained how to fly a plane and drop out of the sky onto the American ship, right on the engine, and blow up the whole ship. So naturally they died in the process, themselves. And more recently they were flown into the twin towers of the erstwhile World Trade Center to destroy it by persons who thought that they would get the glorious blessings of Allah by doing so. So this is in the mode of ignorance. The fearlessness of the kamikaze pilots and the fearlessness of the jihadi, I guess you could call it, pilots, that is fearlessness based on belief in future better rewards, but that is in the mode of ignorance. Thinking that by causing destruction to others, that they will gain benefit. Of course, Arjuna also did that, and Hanuman also did that. But that was based on a principle of proper knowledge. So, how important it is to have proper knowledge. A devotee has to face death fearlessly. He does so because of his faith in Krishna, that Krishna will protect me. Prabhupada once described that for a devotee, death is like going to sleep, and when you wake up, you're with Krishna. So, for a devotee, there is no pain at the time of death. For a devotee, death means to go to meet Krishna. So, for a devotee, death, actually there's no death as such for a devotee, simply leaves the body. Death means, there are different words, I don't know in Marathi, but one name for death is Kala. In Sanskrit, Kala means death. Kalo yam. Kala, time, and Yam means Yamaraj. Another word for death is Yamaraj. But a devotee, he doesn't go to, at the time of death, he doesn't go to see Yamaraj. Yamaraj may come to see him, to congratulate him. But he doesn't go to Yamaraj, because if a devotee goes to Yamaraj, then the whole of hell will become empty. By the devotee going there, by seeing him, all the inhabitants of hell, they'll become purified. So Yamaraj, he has a job to do, and so just like he complained when by following the Ekadashi. What is that? I couldn't understand. We're talking about, the Papa Purush was made. If the devotee goes to see Yamaraj, all the Yamadutas, they'll run away in fear, seeing the devotee. They're afraid of him. Everyone is afraid. Why are people afraid at the time of death? They're afraid of the Yamadutas. Recently, did you see that? There was that came one devotee was saying how she went to see her father when he was dying, and showed all the symptoms. They're coming to get me. Don't let them get me. And in medicine, they've called it some syndrome. What's it called, doctors? Terminal restlessness syndrome. They're expert, aren't they, at avoiding reality. Their terminal restlessness is due to seeing the Yamadutas who are waiting around, saying, just another 10 minutes. So they're expert. It's just natural, it's normal, you see. So much fear. Why are people afraid at the time of death? Why? What do the doctors say? Is there any explanation? Doctors, any doctors here? What is their explanation? Anyway, they must have some explanation. Whatever it is, they got it wrong. They're afraid because people know, now I am going to see Yamaraj. Now I shall suffer for all my sinful activities. People look back at all the things they've done throughout their life. At the time of death, one sees all his activities in a second, sees all his life run before him like a replay, like a cinema. And you see, oh, I did this. Oh, I did that. And those things which during his life had brought him so-called pleasure, now it brings him fear because now he knows that I have to suffer for that. I was pulling the wing off the fly. I was cheating this person. I was exploiting that person. I was taking pleasure in another's distress. Now I have to suffer. I was eating the flesh of slaughtered animals. Now I have to suffer for that. He knows. And this suffering is of such a dimension. He feels tremendous fear in facing that and knowing that there is no way for me to avoid this. On the one hand, there is fear of leaving behind the body, the distress of leaving behind the body and everything associated with it. And at the same time, there is the fear of suffering. the results of one's karmic reactions. So it is extremely fearful for the non-devotee. Death is so horrible. It's not just the pain of being wrenched out of the body, but the distress at leaving behind all those things that one is attached to, and the fear of entering into a condition in which one cannot control, but one is forced to suffer intensely for a long time. This is material life. People are wasting their lives, spoiling their lives, not realizing what is reality. Reality is that we have to suffer so much for our sinful reactions. Previously, people in India were afraid of committing sinful activities. They were afraid of meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication. They were afraid of even drinking tea. Do you know that? Prabhupada said that in the beginning the British were trying to market tea among the Indian people. They wouldn't take it. They thought this is sinful. And then gradually they promoted it. They gave it away free and said, actually it's very good for health. And this, and then when people got a taste, then they sold it to them. So people were so pious that they were afraid even to drink tea. And now we find in South India, the brahmanas, they cannot start the day without a big, strong cup of coffee. How they changed. One devotee was telling me, he was at the market in South India, and he had his Brahmin thread was quite visible there. And he was purchasing, among other things, carrots. When a Brahmin came up to him and said, you're not ashamed, you're wearing Brahmin thread and you're purchasing carrots, which is forbidden. You know that? Carrot is forbidden. Especially red items and especially mostly nowadays the carrot that you get in India, there's Deshi Gajjar and there's also Videshi. So mostly the Videshi carrot is there, because actually it's better in many ways, than it's got more juice in it. It's not more juicy. So this devotee said to him, well, my dear sir, do you happen to drink coffee? Yes. You don't find there's anything wrong with that. It's a strong intoxicant. If you drink 5-6 cups of strong coffee, then you get a strong rush. It's like a rush means you get the effect, intoxication. It's a strong intoxicant. People, they start the day with coffee. Get a charger because it's intoxicating. So people wouldn't take these. They were afraid. This is sinful. But nowadays, by wrong education, people are accustomed. People in India are accustomed to all kinds of sinful activities. Not only they are accustomed to it, not only are they shameless in performing sinful activities, not only are they shameless, but they think it's very good to do so. Now you'll find that openly young men and women are flirting with each other, touching each other, embracing each other, which previously that was unthinkable. One generation ago was unthinkable, but now it's very good. It's very good. Now we gave up our old taboos. Now we're more modern. We're more natural. They say, be natural. Give up your inhibitions. But the result of giving up these inhibitions is that when you're fed up with, because sex doesn't bring any satisfaction. If you say this to young men, they won't, who haven't had the experience of sex slaves, they won't believe it. Say, it must be. But then when they have the experience, if they're a little bit, of course, if they're totally gross, then they become more enlivened by that. But many, after having the experience, if they're somewhat cultured, they wait until they get married. But then after, so many times, again, these are things we're not supposed to talk about in class, according to certain temple presidents, but anyway, temple president's not here, so he's not here to chastise me. He can do so later by email or something. But anyway, several times I asked young men that, so now you're married, so now you have the opportunity to indulge your senses in various ways that you weren't doing so previously. So you're finding it's very enjoyable? No. It's not. It's just advertised as such, that's all. So when you get fed up of sex, then you try something else, homosex. That's very common in the Western world. And they're promoting it in India. This girlfriend, they made some movie, you know. They're promoting that. Actually, what happened when Prabhupada was in America, one female disciple was telling him that, you know, I have a problem living with all these ladies, and you know, because I'm some sexual attraction. And Prabhupada, he couldn't understand what she was trying to say. She was embarrassed to say it fully. So then one disciple explained to him, what is this lesbianism, that a girl is attracted sexually to another girl. And Prabhupada, he never heard of it. He said, well, in India, we know some people, they have man to man, but woman to woman, he never even heard of it. And now they're promoting it in India. Just see how sinful India has become. That they're deliberately promoting that what people had not even thought of. I was just told that in Denmark, they have legalized, because in America they legalized man marrying man. Marriage? How could it be a marriage? But anyway, they've legalized man marrying man. And even in the churches, the priest is marrying one man to another man. So, not wanting to be behind in the degradation, in Denmark, they've gone further and they've legalized that a man can marry his own son. Where is the end to the degradation? It's very difficult to... I mean, these things are unimaginable when I was a youth. But... they've imagined it now. Not only imagined it, but they're allowing it. And not only they're allowing it, but they're promoting it. How sinful. And it's so sinful, but even in the Western countries, to speak against homosex is a crime. To say anything against it is a crime, to say again anything against it or write anything against it. So how much demoniac these governments are. Just like in India, it's a crime to say anything favorable about sati, which means that, about the act of sati, which means that actually these books, in Prabhupada's books, they're actually illegal. No one found out yet. Of course, this sati has been much misused. But it is a Vedic rite that for a woman who's so much attached to her husband, that separation from him is more painful than the fire. So she finds the fire pleasing. cooling. For a woman who actually has this attitude, now I'm saying something illegal. For a woman who actually has this attitude of pativrata, dedication to her husband, then as she enters the fire, she will feel it as cool. It's very rare in the modern age. So it's not recommended. We are not promoting it. But previously that was there. It's a Vedic usage. So to decry it is another symptom of demoniac governments. We live in a very unfortunate time. Kamsa, he was demoniac ruler. And unfortunately, most of the rulers today, they're following in the footsteps of Kamsa. Kamsa killed so many children, and they're doing so also in the modern age by abortion. Same thing. Just now in America, I was told that the federal government had outlawed something which I didn't even know was going on. But they had what they called abortion. It means when the child is over 6 months, they induce birth, and then as soon as the fetus comes out, they kill it. That was allowed. So at least the present government, although they're busy killing animals in the slaughterhouse and killing people in Iraq, but at least they outlawed that. So, but meantime, all the other abortions go on. So very, very sinful. Very, very sinful society. And how much at the time of death, how much fear people will have, because they have to proceed to their next phase of existence, of sinful life. The sinful life, the reactions to that sinful life. So it's a very horrible situation for the materialist. Prabhupada writes here in the purport that atheistic persons, when they find no other recourse, they go to church and they pray to God. So you may say, well, if they're atheistic, how do you say they're praying to God? But actually they're atheistic. Most of what goes on in the name of religion in the world today is it's not God consciousness, it's atheism. They say, we believe in God. But who they believe in is not actually God, because they've given God they've given God's job description as some vague entity who fulfills my desires for sense gratification. God is a co-conspirator in my endeavors for sinful life. So they say they believe in God, but who they believe in, it's not actually God. God's function is not to give us blessings so we can enjoy sense gratification. God bless America. It's a common saying in America, especially at the time of elections. The Republican Party, they are purportedly, they represent the Christian right wing. So they say, God bless America. Why should he bless only America? Why are you asking him to bless? God bless us so that we can go on killing the Arabs. And the Arabs are saying, they're not saying Inshallah, they're saying Allahu Akbar. God give us strength to kill these Americans. So are they theists? Ultimately, this whole attitude is demoniac. that God shall give us strength to kill others and kill animals. It's all demoniac. They're not supposed to kill animals wantonly. They have this idea of kosher food and halal food, because in the Abrahamic texts, it's stated that one should not, among all the foods that are forbidden to take, there is the blood of animals. So that means you shouldn't eat meat. But instead they bleed the animals to death, and then they eat it. And they're very particular. Oh, we won't eat any meat in which the animal has not been bled to death. So it means more suffering for the animal to kill in they're strapped upside down and the throat is slit. And still some blood will remain inside, but they're so desirous of eating meat that they go on doing so, despite the scriptural injunctions against it. So where are the theists? It is not theism. They say they believe in God, but they're going against the desire of God. And so they too have to suffer at the hands of Yamaraj. They may think, well, I believed in God. I was a practicing Jew. I was a practicing Christian. I went to church every Sunday. But this cheating religion will not protect us from karmic reactions. And what to speak of those who are, they don't care at all for any religious practices. Just like modern Hindus, particularly due to the influence of such Mayavadis as those who say Jato Mat Toto Pat, all paths, as many opinions, that many paths, or the disciple, the so-called disciple of that so-called guru, he said, it doesn't matter what you eat, what matters is your consciousness. So eat meat, be strong. He was promoting this Nirvivek Nirananda. He was promoting, eat meat, become strong, go to hell with me. So this actually, they've had a very great influence, because nowadays we see people, they don't care for sinful life. They think, well, they have no fear. They have no fear of sinful life, because they don't care. They don't even know what is sin, because if you say that Mayavad, everything is all the same, everything is all one, then there's no distinction between punya and pap, and the tendency of the conditioned soul is to, for its sense gratification, to indulge in sinful activities. So much work we have to do to educate people. Actual knowledge, Krishna consciousness. The present educational system is one that trains you how to prepare yourself fully to go to hell. This is the modern educational system. Directly and indirectly. Pratyaksha paroksha. Or directly and indirectly. It trains how to go to hell. Directly by Darwin's theory. And then in the school, in social studies, they teach, these are the foods we eat. Eggs, meat, and chicken. And in Tamil Nadu, the Brahmin chief minister has made an ordinance that every child should get an egg every day at school. So directly they're promoting sinful activities. And indirectly in the school, when you get a little older, the main things you learn in school are how to drink, how to smoke, how to lie, how to cheat, and how to seduce women. And the girls, they learn how to seduce the men, how to make the young boy students slaver over them like dogs. You know this word slaver, like the dog. So they've the young girls in the college, they know how to dress and flutter their eyes, and so the men are fainting. So these are the things, directly and indirectly. They're preparing themselves for a sinful life. Very sinful civilization. Kamsa, he would have been very happy to have ruled over present India. He wouldn't have so much work, because everyone would be naturally his follower. How much work there is to do to give actual education. And how much difficult it is to do when our devotees themselves are so much attached to all the wrong ideas they learned in their youth. Coming to Krishna consciousness should mean sarvam etadritam manye yang mang vadasi keshava. We accept everything that Krishna says. But our tendency is to accept it with just a little yes, but. Just yes, I accept everything that Krishna says. I'm an initiate devotee. But as soon as we hear the word but, we know they're in Maya. They don't accept Krishna. They want to adjust what Krishna says or make some amendment. And you say, well, Krishna, all those things, yes, that's very good. I agree, it's all very good. But, and then so many reasons will come. Time, place, and circumstance, Prabhu. In the name of time, place, and circumstance, we reject everything in the Vedic culture. Very intelligently. I need to go to America. It will be better for my Krishna consciousness. I've heard that one a few times. You know, all I want to do is be Krishna conscious, but you know, here in India I have so many attachments, so it's better I go to America. So many excuses. Very clever in using Krishna for my sense gratification. But Krishna is more intelligent than us. We didn't realize that yet. And therefore, Ashradhana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Aprapyamang Nivartante Mrityu Sangsara Vartmani. Because we don't have faith in Krishna, because we don't want to accept what he says. Therefore, we have to come back to repeated birth and death. It's not pleasant. There is nothing pleasant in repeated birth and death. It is extremely horrible. Now, what's so bad about it? What's bad about it is that we're not with Krishna. That's actually the suffering. But because we're such rascals, we think, I'm not with Krishna. Good. Let me get on with life without Krishna. But actually, we can't be happy without Krishna. Krishna very mercifully arranges the suffering of material life so that we can someday wake up to understand, I am meant to be with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? There are many supporting factors, yes. Krishna consciousness means Vedic culture, and Vedic means Krishna consciousness. They're interlinked. Just like we see how Krishna consciousness means to live and act for the pleasure of Krishna, to prepare ourselves to go to Krishna. So how does Krishna live? What does Vedic culture mean? It means to live in the way that Krishna lives. How Krishna eats, how he dresses, how he interacts with others, all these different things. So Krishna consciousness and Sanskriti, they are inseparable, yes? There are various attempts to undermine Vedic culture, even by some Hindu organizations. And the result of this is that intelligent people, they go against Vedic culture. Which Hindu organizations? You mean like the BJP made 1/3 reservation for the women in the parliament? Action to the movie, yeah. This girlfriend movie, was such that people, supposedly intelligent people, tended to support the movie. What's happened in the university, in the educational institutions, the whole ethos is one of liberalism, in which it's considered intelligent to be very tolerant of everything. You should let everyone do what they like. But in the name of this tolerance, they tolerate so much nonsense. So people who are considered intolerant, they're considered fanatics. And so supposedly intelligent people, if they see that we are very strongly supporting any particular mode of action, or even more, if we are very strongly against any other mode of action, then they reject that. No, no, you should let everything should be allowed to go on. Yeah, so? Attempt to do anything about all these different things. Yes, of course we should. Or should we just be preaching Krishna consciousness? Well, that is the thing to change the modern misguided civilization. But especially by writing and speaking, we can discuss these issues, just like I discussed it in the class today. We see that Prabhupada, his Back to Godhead magazine, which he started in 1944, he was discussing current issues in the light of Bhagavad Darshan, in the light of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So certainly we should do. Otherwise, people may think that Krishna consciousness, it's a religious movement, which has got no real relationship to modern life. And it is nothing, we have nothing to, we're just in our own little world, and we have nothing to do. We're not practical. We don't have anything to offer modern society. It's just you chant Hare Krishna, and then whatever in the world is going on. The real world is going on, and this Krishna conscious movement is just some kind of escapism. But no, we should show how Krishna consciousness applies to every facet of modern life, and we have the proper solution. Now, people who are somewhat moral, they can understand that promoting lesbianism is not good, but they can't explain why exactly. We can. So actually, the Krishna conscious movement, it should lead the Hindu revival. Mostly that so-called Hindu revival, it's going on as a political movement, but without any proper information. They're supporting Hindu culture as they perceive it or as they conceive of it. So, actually the Krishna conscious movement should give the direction as to what the real Hindu culture is. The first point in Hindu culture is to understand that we're not Hindus anyway. The word Hindu itself is a misnomer. What is the original Sanatan Dharma that we should teach? This this Hindutva, as they call it, in some ways it's good, but not in all ways, because they don't have proper information. So we should give that, we should educate. There's another question. You can go to a 5-star luxury air-conditioned hospital and die there. So you might feel that in having, you'll be on a ventilator and have all different tubes, and very scientifically you can die. There's no protection. It's an illusion that we have protected from nature. There is no protection. There's no protection against karmic reactions. Therefore, persons who are intelligent, they do not endeavor for that which they cannot attain. Would you like to be the president of America? Would you like to endeavor for that? There's no way you can be, because the law is you can't become, because they have a law that even if you went to America, became an American citizen, you have to be a born American citizen to become the president. So there's no use for you to attempt to become the president of America, because you can't. So why should we endeavor so much? Of course, it may be just like you have we have air conditioning. That is some protection against the heat. Of course, air conditioning itself, that brings in so many other problems, because you tend to pick up viruses more easily in an air-conditioned environment, and persons who suffer from rheumatic and arthritic complaints, that is increased by going in air conditioning. So we may protect against the heat, but then we find another problem comes. So whatever material progress is there, it seems to be better, but you'll find there's always another side which cancels it out. Now we can drive here and there, but then there's so much pollution and road accidents and noise from the vehicles, and you have to work to make that, to purchase that vehicle, doing something you don't want to do. So this material progress, we may think, oh, we're primitive. Of course, if we take up Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean that we have to go and live in a jungle. But even if we do, it's not necessarily that that's a more primitive existence. This is the brainwashing. They say it's very primitive to live without electricity. But we say it's very primitive to live without chanting Hare Krishna. Your consciousness is like that of an aborigine. Even the aborigines chant Hare Krishna. You're less developed than they. If we live without electricity, without running polluted water in our taps, if we live without cars and trains and telecommunications and computers and TVs and electric toothbrushes and flushing toilets, but we're chanting Hare Krishna, that is a far more advanced position than to have all these modern amenities and live a life of ignorance. You don't believe it. You're a fool. Excuse me saying so, but satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, ma bruyat, satyam apriya. That is, we're not supposed to say so, but when it comes to speaking the truth, we have to say. If we don't know what our actual necessity is, and we spend our whole life dedicated to trying to attain something that we cannot, that is foolishness. Everyone's life is dedicated to attaining material comfort with the illusion that we are protected from material nature. So everyone's life is dedicated to attaining something that they cannot attain. This is called foolishness. So Krishna consciousness is very practical and very realistic, because we can attain Krishna by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. It is much more practical to attempt to attain Krishna consciousness than to foolishly attempt to attain material happiness, because there's no such thing as material happiness. It doesn't exist. And even if we think it exists, the so-called material happiness, what is that happiness? Just like you may think, it's very nice to have scent, eau de cologne. It's very nice. So you can enjoy our having eau de cologne on our bodies as we are whipped constantly. Material life means whipping constantly from Maya. And oh, such a nice smell as we're being whipped. So yes, you can say there's pleasure, but the pleasure in material life means we get 0.01% so-called pleasure, and then 99.99% of suffering. And we think this is pleasure. So it is foolishness to even think that we can have material happiness. What to speak of dedicating our lives to trying to attain it? Krishna consciousness is actually practical. Because we are actually happy. You're trying to be happy by material endeavors, but you're not. And we're happy by spiritual endeavors. So if your aim of life is to be happy, then you should join us. And you may think, well, that's just, you know, this foolishness, jumping up and down in bed sheets, and what is this? So your material friends, your materialistic friends, they may not approve of that. And they may think, well, you're all crazy. Well, even if we're crazy, we're happy. But actually, this is not crazy. This is based on such deep philosophy that most people, their brains can't even begin to accommodate it, because their brains are full of all kinds of useless information. People are not trained to understand spiritual knowledge. They're trained to think that this is foolishness, but actually this makes sense. And nothing else makes any sense. The mic I'm using. It's part of ISKCON Pune. It's part of the spiritual world. Someone has invented this. We're not going to take the trouble to invent it. If they've invented it, we shall use it. Who invented it, they will get benefit from it being used in Krishna's service. But if there's not a mic, it's not that we're going to stop chanting Hare Krishna. That will go on. It went on for so many thousands of years before there was a mic, and it will go on for so many thousands of years after all the mics are finished also. Krishna consciousness is not dependent on any material condition. A balance between working life and Krishna consciousness. The working life in the modern age is such that they make sure you don't have time for Krishna consciousness. When we say working like an ass, it's not really correct, because even the asses would go on strike if you worked them so long. It's working like an ass, super ass. No time. To be Krishna conscious, it requires some time. We need time for sadhana. Just like our program begins at 4:30 in the morning, and today it's gone on for 6 hours. Normally it finishes what time? 9 o'clock? So there's 4.5 hours. in the morning. But those who are at work, they don't have 4.5 hours to spare for sadhana. Any initiated grihastha devotees present here who every day have 4.5 hours sadhana in the morning? Where is the time? Because you have to rush off to the office or to the college or to the hospital or whatever. So you have to make the best use of a bad bargain. Truncated sadhana. Do the best you can. Srila Prabhupada, he wanted these rural communities. The main reason he said was so that people can save time for chanting Hare Krishna. Time for prosecuting Krishna consciousness. But we think I have to have my car and my mixi and my TV and therefore I have to work to get all these things. So we're caught in the trap of materialistic life. But anyway, do the best you can. At least chant while you can. Read when you can. Come to the Maha Satsanga, as it's advertised, at 12:30 today on Sundays. Do the best you can. Better to leave this materialistic way of life and join a devotee community in which you don't have to work like an ass. You have time for chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And finish there. Grace of the United Nations, they had tube wells, hand pumps, in most villages, not all villages. So, still alive. And actually I did a lot of chanting Hare Krishna, because what else is there to do? It's very good not to have electricity, because what are you going to do when the electricity stops? There's no TV to watch, there's no light, so you sit down and chant Hare Krishna. And that's what they used to do in the villages of Bangladesh, the Hindus, before they got TV. Now they have electricity and TV. And after many years I went back to Bangladesh, I was in a village, and I saw in every house they have pictures on the walls of beautiful young girls. Their culture has changed. They used to have pictures of Krishna, but now they have the TV. Their culture has changed. So better chant Hare Krishna. So that how to live a very high-class way of life, I've described in this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. How people used to live without all these things and without modern education. The spiritual culture of India described through the eyes of people who have lived that life is described in this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. And yesterday, I was showing all the different books I've written. One that I didn't announce, it's a new book of mine, Sri